about you, Shelly?
Okay, Shelly, are you ready to go? Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, June 5th, 2012. I would ask the audience to join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you. Greetings to everyone. We appreciate you all being here. We're going to move along, follow the agenda. Board, prior to under item number four, when we get there, we'll discuss possibly an opportunity for to have many of our guests speak on an item that is going to be pulled from the consent agenda at a later time to accommodate them. So, first of all, item number three is a consideration of minutes of 5-17-12, which was a special meeting, and then 5-22-12 and 5-29-12.
Move approval.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Are there any comments or additions? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved from 5-17, 5-22, and 5-29. Okay. Item number four is public comment number one. This is a comment period where members of the audience may address the board regarding a topic on today's agenda. We had received some email requests from several members regarding the Matrix, Master Matrix, the manure management plan for our hog confinement here in Story County. And we've been asked to pull that for discussion, and so we will pull that when we get to the consent agenda in for follow-up, but so that those of you may not have to sit through the full hour and a half to 2 hours, this would be appropriate if you would like to comment regarding that particular topic. And as I look at the sheets that are here, Board, I'm going to ask your indulgence to allow me to invite these members to talk about that particular item, which will still be pulled under the consent, and then we can determine that at that time.
Yeah, okay. Wayne, that works for me, but I would also ask us to consider, since we know we're going to pull this item, would it be appropriate to have the people that want to speak to this item speak to it as we start the conversation about it? I just feel like we're getting maybe a little disjointed, have people speak here, and then we talk about it later.
Well, the only advantage would be is, and I'm not real sure if anyone from the auditor's office or public health, is Margaret planning to be up here at all and
so.
Comment? She may have just a few information about the process, so we technically won't be commenting at this point. We would just be receiving public comment. So
at this point, we wouldn't. And what I'm suggesting is if we hold off. Now, if there's people who want to comment and then leave, I sure get that and understand it. But I kind of like the idea of us being able to have a conversation about this. If we're pulling it because it's worthy of conversation, which I agree that it is, then I'd like to have the full conversation, Margaret and everybody else, if we can.
Right. Right. I can go either way. I'm just trying to accommodate.
Well, I think this is chair's. Chair's prerogative how we run the meeting, and so I'm just asking you to consider always.
Right. Good. Any thoughts one way or the other, sir?
If anybody needs to leave, I mean, this would be the time for them to make their comment because we're not sure exactly how long the meeting will run before we get to that.
Okay. We have 6 individuals. Is any of you going to need to leave before near the end of the meeting, which is when we would actually look at the consent agenda? Okay. Well, if not, then we can hold off until we get to that opportunity. Okay. And hopefully the rest of it will not take nearly as long, but we certainly acknowledge that this is a topic very worthy of hearing input from all of you. So with that, then we will again, ask if there's anyone else that would like to speak to an item other than the hog confinement issue. You can certainly bring this to our attention at this time. Okay, seeing no other comments. Okay, Public hearing item. This is consideration of resolution 12-103 to authorize a tax increment revenue loan agreement and to issue a tax increment revenue project note in the amount not to exceed $500,000. Lucy Martin from the auditor's office. Lucy, do you have any comments in regard to this particular item?
I was under the impression that bond counsel was going to present on this, but I brought the information. This is just your intent to approve the loan agreement and issue a tax increment revenue project note. Details of the loan will be arranged later. That's with consultation with our bond counsel and internal counsel. They're going to speak with the banks and set up the details of that. So,
Lucy, the rationale or the reason for having this discussion a little bit with you at this point, in visiting with the treasurer, there was some concerns as to the wording in the document and the intent of the term loan when it's and whether or not
that
we
was
are
when
confusing
we
that
loaned
with
ourselves
the NFI.
Money. This is us borrowing money for TIF project. Okay.
Right.
It's two, and Lucy, just help me if I miss something here. This is two separate issues. Back on December 1st, when we certified debt up to $500,000, that was an
inter-fund transfer.
Right. And now this is how we're going to pay back that inter-fund transfer and get on really the true TIF process.
This is right. You issuing debt, right. TIF debt.
But it's $500,000 that we had already approved as part
correct.
Of last year's TIF projects.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Good. Is that you're comfortable with that assessment?
Like I say, documents were prepared by bond counsel with consultation with our internal counsel. I posted these on the agenda as required. I've not been privy to those conversations about the details of the loan.
All right. So, one thought, and again, was the actual wording of the resolution that we are actually using the term loan agreement here.
The resolution was prepared by Bob Johnson, who is our bond counsel.
Okay.
So any questions on that would have to be addressed to him.
Okay. All right.
Which is why we pay him his fee.
All righty. Sound like a winner. Well, with that, then, I will open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone that would like to speak to this resolution, Resolution 1203. Okay. Hearing no one, then I will close the public hearing and turn to the board.
Move approval of Resolution 12-103.
It's been moved and second the approval of 12-103. Discussion. Okay. I would just want to acknowledge that this was an issue that was brought to my attention by the Treasurer just in terms of the wording and an understanding of the intent and how this would all transpire, and I believe the discussion that you gave Lucy and also Supervisor Sanders clearly identifies the scope of the intent on the part of the funds and how it would be administered. So just wanted to certainly acknowledge that. Okay. Also, with that, then I will roll call. So Sanders. Mr. Sanders.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Resolution 12-103 is adopted. Okay. All right. Good. Okay. Then moving on to additional items, consideration of Resolution 12-101, which is amending the interfund operating transfer. Okay. Auditor Lucy Martin.
This is just transferring money from the TIF fund, which is a revenue fund, into the TIF capital projects fund, which is... after consultation with the state auditor's office last fall when we first set up our TIF, is we set up two funds, The TIF revenue fund is where we keep TIF proceeds. When we make expenditures, we move those to the TIF capital projects fund. So that's what we're doing here. I know you're looking to spend money, I think, at Deacon's Lake. Is that right? So since we're actually ready to spend money now, we're going to transfer it to the TIF capital projects fund, which is what this resolution does.
Lucy, my question is would we necessarily need to transfer the full amount or just as the bills need to be paid?
How many resolutions do you want to do? Do you know you're going to spend $500,000? I think it's $2.5 million is what we're up to. So.
Right now, we don't know that at this point, and that's my part of the question is if we have to come back and then have another resolution to actually spend those dollars, would it be feasible for us rather than moving all of those dollars at this point? So it's just more or less, I know at some point, whatever the cost is, I think the $500 was a reasonable guesstimate as to what the total project cost would be. However, a lot of those dollars probably are not going to be spent for several months now until they have been completed.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Lucy, but this just, if this were to pass, it just authorizes up to $500,000.
Right.
It doesn't say that $500,000
total maximum transfer.
Total maximum transfer. What we just passed in 103 said we were going to borrow up to $500,000 as it was needed. We know that we've already spent some dollars on the Deacon's Lake project. To my knowledge, I don't think Darren's here, but we haven't spent any money yet on the Vetter paving on 590th. We haven't spent anything on the bike lanes on Country Club. Those were the three projects that were rolled into this thing. We know we do. I'm going to – Mike, tell me if I'm way, way off here, but I think we've spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000, $250,000 with Deacon's Lake planning and conceptual work so far. Contract with the engineers, $141,000. Okay, so we know that it's going to be Mike Cox, our director of conservation. We know it's going to be somewhere around 150 so far that we spent. With our two actions today, assuming that 101 passes, we are authorizing up to $500,000 in borrowing, and we're also authorizing the auditor to move up to $500,000 from that revenue fund to the place
to the capital projects fund where we can actually make expenditures.
These two just go together hand in glove.
Good. Any further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, board, what's your pleasure on resolution 101?
Approval of resolution 12-101.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The approval of 12-101. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll calls. Toot?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 12-101 is adopted. Again, thank you.
If I can just make a shameless plug for voting, polls are open until 9 p.m. today.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Lucy, thanks to you and your staff for all your work on days like this, especially.
Okay. Moving on then, thank you. Item number two under additional item is a discussion and consideration of the organization of the agenda. This topic was brought up at our last meeting by Supervisor Sanders, and it was discussed with Michelle, the clerk to the board. We thought it was appropriate that we look at where we are and then, if necessary, would vote to consider any changes from how the agenda is basically authorized. It is the purview of the Board of Supervisors to set the agenda as they see fit, so we can adjust or change how that agenda is put forth. But I'm going to yield to Supervisor Sanders, first of all, because this was your thought, and since we have some new faces in the audience, you may want to share a little bit as to why this has been brought to our attention for our consideration. Okay?
Sure. I mean, the simple answer as to why we're talking about this is it was rightly pointed out to me a few weeks ago in the midst of one of our three-hour-plus meetings when we had people sitting in the audience waiting for an item that was on the consent agenda, not going to be pulled. It was just part of the consent agenda. That it really seems like a big waste for somebody to have to sit through 3 hours of a meeting in order for us to get to something that we're not even going to talk about. Since it is within the board's purview to arrange the agenda in any way we see fit, as long as it reasonably portrays to the public what we're doing in the meeting, so that people can have a reasonable expectation of when things are going to happen, we're empowered to rearrange it any way we see fit. So what I'm suggesting is that we take what is 10, 11, 12, and 13 on today's agenda, other reports, consideration of personnel actions, consideration of claims, and consent agenda, and move all of those up to the top right after public comment number one. Like I say, I think it's something that we're empowered to do. It gives us some flexibility in the budget. It would let us dispose of the relatively minor topics at the beginning of the meeting rather than at the end of the meeting, and I think it makes it simpler for
everybody. Okay, so walk me through just briefly again.
Sure.
So it would be item 7, did you say?
Nope.
No.
Item 10, 11,
10, okay.
12, and 13. So
starting with other reports, okay.
Yep, other reports down through consent agenda. Pull those out of there, Wayne, and move them all the way up to number 5. And then everything else, so public hearing items and everything else, just slides down.
We'll lose part of our captive audience.
Yeah, it will be lonely.
Would. Yeah, yeah. Paul, any thoughts regarding that?
Couple of conversations with Shelley last week about this and how we thought it would best flow, and that was what we had come up with, is move those items up to the top and just slide everything down.
Okay. Great.
So do we need a motion to...
Yes, we would.
I will move that we adjust our agenda starting next week as noted by Supervisor Sanders.
Second.
It's been moved and second to adjust the agenda order of entries for our consideration at our regularly scheduled board meetings from this point forward. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And thank you, both of you and Shelley, for your work in this area. Is that clear for you? As should be fairly simple routine, okay? Good. All right. Okay, then moving on, discussion, item 3, discussion and consideration of a request from the medical examiner to appoint additional medical examiner investigators. Supervisor Toot?
As you guys recall here, a month or 6 weeks ago, we made the appointment of 2 medical examiner investigators to assist the county medical examiner in his duties. He has made a request of me that we make an additional appointment, and that's not on today's agenda. But and so I asked him basically, I says, what do you envision for your staff? And he thought up to 4, possibly 5. He's the currently the pathologist at McFarland Clinic, does the work for the clinic and the hospital. He's also got a contract with a larger hospital up in north, or going to have, supposedly have a contract this fall with a larger hospital up in northwest Iowa, which is going to take some more of his time. He would like to continue the duties as the medical examiner, but he feels in order to complete that successfully, he's going to need the assistance of some more investigators. So,
does this mean there is a employment or record change? Would these assistants be a part of Story County, or are they just be part of the contract that we currently have with him, and they would be assistance to as needed when their services need to be rendered?
The two that we appointed act as private contractors. They're paid on a fee-for-service basis, and that would continue. We don't have any intention of adding them as county employees. I don't see any intention of that in the near future. So any that we would add would be added as the other two were, as an independent or a private contractor. They get called by the medical examiner to go out to assist at a scene of an unattended death. They're paid a flat fee of $100 for the investigation, and they're also reimbursed their mileage.
So currently the possibility adding 2 would be up to 4. Was there ever any discussion about the number? Could that number exceed four at some point?
I think.
And if it did, would it have to come back to us for approval?
I think initially in our conversations a year or so ago, he had envisioned a staff of about four. And that was our conversation again here the other day. I mean, they're appointed and they serve a term just like the medical examiner does. These two that we've appointed, and if we decide to appoint one more, their term will be up the end of this year, and they'll have to be reappointed with a medical examiner.
Are we paying for their certification or anything like that?
No,
so,
not at this
point. All right, so help me if I'm missing this, Paul. We pay for the service. So what we're talking about doing here is not going to change the number of unattended deaths in Story County. It's just going to change the number of people that could, in fact, work that unintended death. It's not going to change our cost at all.
It'll change our cost slightly because we cover them under the county's liability policy.
Remind me what that cost us.
The last two that we appointed, it was $103 to put those two on the county's liability policy. So I'm assuming that for an additional one, it'll be half that. So,
do we need to take action today, or are we just bringing this to our information in case he asks?
I'm just bringing it. I think what we should probably take action to approve the addition, since he did request that we add one more. And then I'm going to meet with the individual this afternoon. If everything works out the way we planned on the contract, if she agrees to the contract, it'll be on the consent agenda for next week for approval. So,
yeah, and where I'm not clear, I'm with you. I mean, hey, have five, have seven. If we're talking about it's costing us $50 basically to have these guys in, and then we just continue to pay for the same service we're already paying for, I understand the need for our medical examiner to have some flexibility in who they send out, and I support that. So if we need to take action today in approving something for his comfort level, that's fine with me. Otherwise, I would say just when he wants us to appoint somebody, bring them forward and let's get them appointed.
Okay. Well, I think since it's on here for discussion and consideration, if we'll just move the approval of this one additional.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and second. The approval of the request to add two additional medical examiner investigators. I believe that is correct. Is there further discussion? Okay. Hearing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Item four under additional items. Consideration of Resolution 1298 regarding the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority 28E Agreement. Planning and Development Director Leanne Harder.
I just have a few slides to share with you and for the benefit of the audience as well. The resolution before you is taking action to approve the Story County's participation in a 28E agreement to form the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. This authority and the concept of such authorities really evolved from the 2008 flooding through legislation, then was adopted through the state of Iowa and codified in the Code of Iowa in Section 466. The Watershed Management Authorities do several things, and they're up there on the screen, but I'm not going to read that. Just simply, they assess flood risks and water quality and water quantity in the watersheds and look to ways to cooperate amongst various entities in activities that are ongoing in that watershed. What's before you is specific to the Squaw Creek watershed. It includes several jurisdictions, and those jurisdictions that can participate and be a party to the 20E agreement are again codified through that same section of the Code of Iowa, and it limits those jurisdictions to cities, counties, or soil and water conservation districts. Again, we're looking at the Squaw Creek watershed specifically, and it includes, pardon me, my voice, these jurisdictions. Those in green have actually taken action to form the watershed to sign the 20E agreement. Concurrently with your meeting right now, I think it's Webster County is acting on the request for the 20E agreement. And there's a whole schedule that from here to the end of the month, the various entities. before you is simply acting on whether or not you do intend to participate in the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority. So everyone has a picture of that. I know it's really difficult to see, but this is attached to the 20E agreement as well. It's that faint purple, pinkish boundary encompasses the Squaw Creek Watershed Management or watershed area. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Earlier on when this was being discussed, when the representative attended the Board of Supervisors meeting in the other member counties, if I recall, some of the emails came back from a couple wondering about if there may be some unintended costs that might be occurred if they signed off on this agreement. How have that been addressed to the best of your knowledge?
Well, if you look at Section 7 of the agreement, which is a manner of financing, it just simply says, one, it defines that the board may solicit funds, the board of directors for the Watershed Management Authority, whether that be grant funds, foundation funds, asking individual entities to contribute. It does. Then the second paragraph just starts by saying no action to contribute funds by a board member is binding on a cooperator that he or she represents. The cooperators are those entities that sign the agreement. So, Wayne, if you were surveying the board of directors and said, yeah, Story County will add to this, unless the actual board of supervisors takes action to finance in some means, it's not binding on the board of supervisors. And it's very clear that unless you decide to enter into a project as fiscal agent, whatever steps you want to take, unless the actual entity itself takes the action needed through your executive powers, it's not binding on you as a representative of the management authority.
Yeah, only other question I have is, as I read this agreement, it is not binding participation in that if down the road Story County were to decide it wanted to not be part of this anymore, you do have the ability to withdraw. So what I'm seeing is you have a program and a project that is worthwhile, necessary, something that can really benefit the whole area. You got a situation where we're not committing any dollars. We're not going to be bound to provide dollars. We're going to be able to deal with that on a case-by-case basis, and we can withdraw anytime we see fit. To me, it looks pretty simple for us where we head on this one.
Now, the only thing for the board to keep in mind, from the fall, I guess actually this beginning this year on forward, Story County has really taken a leadership role in this endeavor. There will be a grant application for Phase 2 that will be announced any day. I guess I'm operating under the assumption that you will want us, Story County, continue to take the lead simply because the contract is between the state and Story County. So I'm prepping on our end to make sure we have the staff put the grant application together, but we'll reach out to others for assistance because if all goes well, we're actually hoping to schedule the first Management Authority meeting for June 21st. And actually, the Management Authority has been formed. There's at least two parties to it. And it would be incredible if we'd have all 12 jurisdictions. I think that would make our chances for the next grant round very solid.
When does Ames address this?
Next week, I think.
June 12th.
Good. And we've had communications between legal counsel from both entities regarding this. And I think, again, as you've outlined it, if you look at how it's the original Watershed Management Authority does deem Story County as taking the lead in this particular area. And if you look at that map, you will see a lot of that watershed area would encompass Story County and so forth. So I would hope that our board would be on board with you continuing to assume the lead in this particular area and work with the various folks that is so designated in the agreement as we move forward in this area. So
I'll move approval of Resolution 1298.
Second.
It's been moved and second the approval of Resolution 1298. Any further discussion? Hearing none, Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 1298 is adopted. Okay.
And, Leanne, I would ask that you continue your leadership role in the management of this contract.
Great. Okay, then moving on down the agenda, agency report, Mid-Iowa Community Action, Arlene McAtee and Janelle Durham from MICA. Good morning. Good morning.
I like it. We get to see you every couple weeks now.
I think we can arrange that.
I think today we've come to deliver our annual report. I'm Arlene McAtee, Executive Director of MICA. This is Janelle Durlin, who is our Health Services Resource Director for Story County. I will speak quickly about family development, since we did have a discussion last week about the services we provide under that portion of our funding. And then Janelle will address what's going on with the health services that we provide in Story County. So there are two services that are funded by asset that MICA provides in Story County. One's our emergency food program that we had a lengthy discussion about last week. And the other is family development, which is a holistic, comprehensive case management style of working with families to overcome significant barriers and bring about significant change. So in our asset-funded activities, our emergency food fund, since October 1st of this year, because we look at the beginning of our fiscal year, which matches the federal fiscal year, we've served 1,271 households or 3,750 individuals. That's the unduplicated account. Now, as I explained last week when I was in here, we do allow families to come in once a month to receive assistance, and we increased how often families could attend because the need that we were seeing out there was so much increased during the last couple of years. And so our multiple use numbers are 2,233 households. That means households since October through April came in a little under twice during that period. So even though they could come in every month, families are not generally doing so. We do have some families that we see all the time. We have families we see only once, and then they're good and they're on their way. Family development, our comprehensive services, we've seen 37 households with 92 visits that received family financial fitness counseling or comprehensive family development through the funding that was provided by ASSET. Overall, in Story County, through our Family Development Center, we've seen over 5,000 individuals. We've assisted over 5,000 individuals, and we have such a wide range of services. That 5,245 doesn't even include the people who come in, who have a problem. We sit down with them. We talk to them about what resources are in the community and help them put a little plan together to go out and through information referral, receive other services. But we did serve 1,174 households with our low-income home energy assistance program this year. That was up in Story County by about 3% from the previous year. So we did see an increase in numbers in Story County on energy assistance. We are also the provider for the Des Moines Register's Embrace Iowa program, where they collect donations for families to receive any variety of things that are needed to address a family situation and increase their safety and development. And we serve 29 people in Story County through that program. We had 66 families receive family development through our other programs beyond those that are funded by ASSET, and you can see that that includes Early Head Start, Early Childhood Iowa, and FADS. And they received 454 home visits since October through April. We've weatherized 31 homes, and we have another 25 homes in Story County audited to receive weatherization services, and we would expect that that would occur this summer. That's our peak period for weatherization activity. 39 children received pre-K education through Head Start and ECI, and 13 families received in-home early childhood services. So that provides an overview of the kind of work that we were doing here in Story County, both through the asset funding we received and through other funds that we're able to bring into the community. Janelle's going to now address what we were able to do on the health services side.
Good morning. Nice to be here again. I think I'll start out with the CACFP program. I gave each of you a little clip packet of the different brochures that we provide in the health programs. The CACFP program stands for Child and Adult Care Food Program. And basically what that is we signed up registered daycare providers in the county to provide healthy snacks for the children in their care. And it's a very, very popular program. In Story County right now, we have 44 providers who are providing healthy meals to the children, and the children total 391. This is a program that's pretty consistent. We usually have about that many, and they are always trying to recruit more folks. And with the economy now, we see that providers are very, very interested in this program to help, you know, ease their budget on their food items in their for the children in their care. The second program is the WIC program. It's the red brochure here. WIC stands for Women, Infant, and Children. It's a nutrition program. And right now in Story County, we have a total of 1,436 people enrolled in the program. This is our largest program by far. Of that 1,400, there are 109 of those moms who are breastfeeding their children. There are 356 infants and then 740 children ages 1 through 4. At the age of 5, they drop off the program. This is a great program. It's not only a way to visit with families about nutrition, but also to educate families on issues of, say, for example, if their child is struggling with diabetes or if the child is obese or underweight. It's a great opportunity for our staff to really connect with a family and try to educate those families on how to best serve their children. The next program is our child health program. Has a group of kids on the front. Child health program is very comprehensive. We served 2,372 children last fiscal year in this program. It involves a lot of different aspects. We're providing fluoride varnish to children. We're checking children's lead levels. We're doing a lot of oral health screenings. In our child health program, every child that comes in the door actually receives a screening, and this is a great way for us to recognize concerns. We immediately connect them to the Story County Dental Clinic, which I'll talk about in a second. But it's just a great, seamless process. Families come in for child health, they're assessed, and then we connect them to the needed resources in the community. The next program I'll talk about briefly is our Living with HIV program. The Living with HIV program started back in 2000, and it has really grown and developed since that time. Each year, we are having now our fundraiser, and the fundraiser is used to raise funds for our clients to get to doctor's appointments and maybe cover emergency needs. The case management program that we provide is very comprehensive. We make sure that folks have a medical provider. We make sure that they have prescription coverage. That's our priorities, and after that, it's whatever the family needs to really create a strong relationship with the community, and also we really try to connect them with any kind of resources they might need. A lot of our folks might struggle with mental health issues and substance abuse issues, and so we really try to connect those with whatever resources they need. And we're really proud of it because we are connecting more and more with Iowa State and providing opportunities for students to learn more about HIV. We always bring a client with us and visit with the classroom. And they really do, I believe that they are really, eyes are really open in terms of understanding how HIV affects someone, not just physically, but mentally. The next program I'll chat about is the First Five program, this brochure. This program, we work with the pediatric providers in Story County. Right now, we have 25 different doctors and nurse practitioners on board in 8 different medical clinics throughout Story County. What we do is when a family goes to see the doctor, if the doctor sees a red flag of any kind, be it in the child's development, it could be the caregiver's mental health, maybe the caregiver mentions a food shortage, for example, whatever kind of red flag the provider hears about, the provider asks the family if they can be connected to MICA's First Five program. And once we receive that referral from their medical provider, we immediately connect the family to whatever resources they need. It has been a very, very successful program in the county. The next program I'll mention is the maternal health program. This provides an additional layer of support for pregnant moms in Story County. Right now, we're at 100 clients this particular fiscal year, and that's a really solid number. These folks many times are those that fall between the cracks. Many of these are uninsured moms. Some are undocumented moms that absolutely deserve prenatal care. And we're excited because now there is a service that comes into the community twice a month up at Bethesda Lutheran Church, and it's a prenatal clinic on wheels. It comes from Broadlawns, and they come up and they provide excellent care to our uninsured moms, and the babies are then delivered down at Broadlawns Hospital. It's been a great program for us to have in our county. And the last program I'll talk about is our dental clinic. Micah takes a lot of pride in this dental clinic. We count on community partnerships to sustain our clinic. We sure do. And as you'll see on the stats, one side shows our fiscal year. The other side shows last fiscal year. You'll see that we serve a lot of folks. Last year, we had over 3,500 patients in our clinic, and you'll see by the stats that we serve a large area. Last year, we served 73% of those folks from Story County, but you'll see that we are really reaching out and serving a lot of folks from surrounding communities. The Boone population, I'm surprised, has really, really jumped. We've been doing a lot of outreach in that community, and are proud to say that we're serving more and more families from that area as well. Our dentist, unfortunately, leaves the end of this month. We had the privilege of hiring Dr. Brad Malhus last July. He is a wonderful, wonderful dentist. A better opportunity came up for him down in Des Moines, and so now we are in search of a replacement. And the end of July or June is fast approaching, and I haven't had much interest in the position yet. So to fill in that blank, as soon as July 1st comes around, we're looking at temporary staff agencies that actually have dentists on board who will come in to fill those slots until we get someone hired. Do you have any questions?
Looks like your numbers for the dental clinic are up so far this year.
They are. The dentist, Dr. Malhus, has been wonderful. He has just really been able to educate the staff on smart scheduling and really has brought the patients wanting to come back. He treats them so very well. So we hope that in the future we'll find a dentist just as good as him who will continue that service to the community.
I would add, because Janelle's not going to say this, that the other reason the numbers are up is that Janelle has been doing an extensive amount of work on outreach and has done a very good job. And she's reached out to some populations that just weren't aware of the service, like the elderly. So we're seeing the numbers of elderly, for example, that we see really go up in that scenario. So a lot of that is due to Janelle making sure people know that the service is there to assist them.
As you look at the crystal ball for the future, looking at what's happening at the federal level in terms of reduced funding to many of the community action agencies and the programs, are you contemplating that we will be at a crisis point at some point where additional clients may not be able to be served based on reduced funding? Or is there other agencies through either state or federal that we may be able to tap in order to meet some of the increased needs that I continually see is going to impact a county such as ours?
It is really a mixed bag for us. And if what happened on Friday is an indication of something that's going to happen with the economy in a more permanent fashion with the stock market, then I am very concerned, because our numbers went up significantly since 2008. Clearly, there were people coming into us that had never had to utilize these services before, since we're an income-based service. As their incomes went down, they needed our assistance, and that's when they showed up at our doors. I was in Washington, D.C. at the end of April with the Marshalltown Chamber of Commerce and their annual summit visit, and we were able to meet with some of the heads of USDA. So, for example, I know that WIC is going to be probably pretty okay, and as Janelle said, that serves a large number of families in Story County through our health services. So WIC looks okay. We had sort of a mixed legislative session where we had FADS received a very tiny increase, but some of the pre-K funding that we get through Shared Visions in the Department of Ed received a cut. I think, Wayne, it's the most volatile period. I've been at MICA for 35 years, and this is probably the most volatile, unpredictable period of time for us, and we are always looking for potential other resources that we can use. And another thing is we just restructured the entire organization to better integrate what funding we have so that we would have things not funded by just one piece, and then if that goes away, then you're vulnerable to losing the whole effort. So we've really been working hard to make the best of what resources we have as well.
Thank you. Great deal, both of you, and for your ongoing efforts and also keeping us abreast as to some of the challenges that you're facing and the successes that we're having in meeting the needs of families and infants out there. Good. So thank you. Have a great day. Okay, next on departmental reports, Central Iowa Tourism, Ames Convention and Business Bureau, Allison Walters. Walter.
Hello.
Hi there.
A little... Of course, we had this all set up at one point.
I think something came unplugged.
Well, now we lost.
Knowledge is great when it works.
Don't you love it? Okay, well, I'll start with Central Iowa Tourism Region. You have the annual report from the Central Iowa Tourism Region there that I left on your desks. They did celebrate their 25th anniversary this year with the annual meeting in May. You can see a little bit about the services included with Central Iowa Tourism, the grants, the legislative connections, and as well as marketing for the region. I served on the advertising grant committee. We were involved with the legislative showcase in February, represented Story County and Ames, and also represented Ames and the Story County area at the Travel Iowa Marketplace last September and will again this year. Also, the grant funding process has begun for 2012-13, and the grant application deadline is October 5th. Information is available for any organization that's interested in grants for advertising, heritage tourism promotion, both print and other, and some tourism training. And that is all available on the Central Iowa Tourism website. And thank you again for sponsoring the membership for Story County. And Julie officially acts as the Story County representative, and I act as the Convention and Visitors Bureau representative. And then I have a few bits of information about the Convention and Visitors Bureau and some events this summer. We've just finished off the Odyssey of the Mind, and there were 15,000 people in Ames, Story County, Boone County, etc. We were even sending people as far away as Des Moines for that event for hotel rooms. Orientation has started now for the month of June, and we did a special mailing to all of the incoming freshmen and transfer students and their families with our Ames Area Visitors Guide, and you have a copy of that orientation issue there on your desk, and that's again in conjunction with the Ames Bulletin Board. We will have a booth at the resource fair all throughout the month of June. And then July, we get into all of our Iowa Games events and the 3 weeks of Iowa Games. And then also this year, we have a big event called Beat Baseball, and that is what I was hoping to show you a little bit of information on. with a video. It's the adaptive version of baseball for the visually impaired. And we're working very closely with the Iowa Sports Foundation and their new organization, the Adaptive Sports Iowa, to bring more of these adaptive sports events to central Iowa. And so our first event will be Beat Baseball in July. And then also we will be hosting the National Junior Disability Olympics in 2013. So just sort of seeing that out on the horizon. And then, of course, in August, we will have the Farm Progress Show at the Boone Central Iowa Expo. And we are putting out a call for volunteers. The Boone County CVB has acknowledged that they've tapped out their volunteer base and are looking for close to 250 more volunteers. So if any nonprofit organizations are interested in volunteering, they can certainly contact me or Kurt Phillips at the Boone Area Chamber of Commerce to get involved with fundraising and volunteer opportunities there. So we're going to hopefully show you a little bit about Beat Baseball. We will be doing some special training in the community for people that are involved with the event so that they can be prepared to help these special athletes.
Nope. This is why we need to have one laptop up here so people can just bring their things.
That will come. I really hope that you can bring this up. This is incredible.
Players hit and run either first or third base, depending on which one is the random buzz. If a batter touches the base before a fielder controls the ball, a run is scored. If the ball is fielded first, batter's out.
This is going to go on for a few more minutes, so if I knew how to stop it, I would. But there we go. So it's a very exciting opportunity, and we'll be looking for a lot of volunteers, and we're in a fundraising mode right now, and working with the Iowa Lions Foundation to bring the event to Ames in central Iowa. So,
and is that going to be at Hunsicker, or is it going to be?
It's actually on the intramural fields by Jack Tri Stadium. Okay. They don't play, you know, they just play in flat grass fields, and it's a week-long event. Opening ceremonies on Monday, and the final championship game on Sunday.
And tell me again when this is?
July 22nd is the week that it starts.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Moving on the agenda of planning and development, Leanne Harder.
That was cool. I like that.
Imagine how challenging that is to actually hit that ball.
You don't cheer until either they make it to base.
Well, yeah, noise, right?
Yeah,
Well, since I was up here last, Webster County Board of Supervisors has joined the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority.
Two more.
Super.
Very exciting. Actually, that was the one entity we weren't quite sure of. And so that was...
Well, it just hits the southeasternmost corner of Webster, right?
And Mark Leander Snyder did just send me a text message that I'm glad I came because they approved it. So,
great.
Just a few items. Administration. The scanning project, I think, has been never-ending. There is definitely an end in sight. We have finished all the subdivision files through enter into the database, which... If you'll recall the filing cabinets we had, that was the last piece of the property-specific files we have. And so those will all go to Tim to be scanned and entered and destroyed. And then we'll do quality control. Our IT department, I've asked them to run a query of all the parcels that are in our VI client so we can compare what's been annexed and then go back and clean that up. But now that's all internal. What we've also asked IT to do, though, is set up an index so we can do the last phase, which is the scanning of all of our Board of Adjustment and Planning and Zoning files dating back to 1958. And so at that point, the bigger step that I don't have a solution to at all is how to get it all linked through GIS. And that's going to be the bigger piece that will have some financial implications that I'll involve IT and other entities with. But last Friday, all the subdivision files were done, and I was the only one there and wanted to throw a pizza party, but it would have been kind of redundant to have pizza, or kind of weird to have pizza by myself. But I guess I'm really excited about it. It was a big moment for me. Planning and Zoning Commission did meet last night. They recommended a conditional use permit for the Cornerstone Church on Highway 65 to the Board of Adjustment. That's the smaller Cornerstone south of Zeering. They will be meeting in July as well to act on two Ames River Fringe amendments. Those will come to you then the end of July, July 31st. Those, again, are the Athens Amendment to the Ames River Fringe and the Oaks Amendment. Board of Adjustment does not meet tomorrow night, but they will be meeting in July. We have two items, one the conditional use permit that was acted on by the Planning and Zoning Commission last night, but also an appeal of the administrator's decision. There was an agricultural exemption that we denied based on several factors, and they have chosen to appeal that to Board of Adjustment. Appeals of director's decisions are very rare, and it's kind of a misnomer to say director's decision. It's actually anyone in our department that makes a decision is appealable to the Board of Adjustment. So Charlie will be the project manager on that, and that one will be an interesting one to unfold. This particular case is a perfect example of something that could could come through that residential parcel subdivision process. And that is, in fact, what we recommended to them, but they chose the appeal process. And we'll let that unfold. I'll continue to update you on that. I received notice last night from Nick Merfeld with Planning and Zoning Commission. His term is up at the end of the year, and given family commitments and work, he'd rather not be reappointed. So we will have a vacancy. I do have a name for you all, though, that we can reach out to. An individual has contacted me, unincorporated resident, and that same individual is actually willing to serve short-term on the Board of Adjustment through the remainder of this year for that vacancy we have. And so I'll work with Paul to get an application to that individual, but I would highly recommend one to interview him if you agree. It would be a worthwhile move for Story County to appoint him interim Board of Adjustment and then take the five-year term for Planning and Zoning Commission. Local foods, we are hoping in July to go to the Story County Conservation Board. I'm going to talk to Mike. I think we're going to ask for the August meeting instead. What we want to do is present one of the strategies is mapping tillable land in under Story County ownership. When I put the original schedule together, we didn't have this administrative appeal come forward, and so we're going to ask for a delay on that. But there's also a grant application that I might be looking at a couple strategies forward. So if I do go forward with that, I'll need a approval of the board to submit a letter of intent. But I'll put that on your agenda for a couple weeks from now if it is something I think that I can comfortably fill out with time commitments and everything. And it does not have a financial match. So it's a very interesting grant application to submit for. Intriguing as well. Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority, you already know that. And again, as I said earlier, I'm waiting any day for the grant announcement to get that phase two going. Conceptual review is next Wednesday, and we have a ton of items that are either on the agenda or we know will be coming in today or will be on there in July. Conceptual review. I mean, we've just had a flourish of phone calls or emails, and I think we're seeing some recovery on that. And I'll get to building permits here soon, too. Connect Iowa, there's a meeting Thursday afternoon with representatives. Paul's going to represent you all at that meeting here at Nevada, in Nevada. I also asked Paul if it'd be worthwhile to have someone from Silos and Smokestacks come and present to you all like we do with Connect Iowa. And so we'll get that arranged. Just see what the opportunities are for Story County to really build some in that program. We are part of that natural heritage boundary. I don't know what the official terminology is. Guide to Rural Living is completed. If you'd like some copies, let us know. But that's going on our website. In addition, all the home business permits have been put on our website. All the current permitted home businesses. Which is pretty exciting. You can go through and see, you know, gunsmithing, who has a home business permit for that in Story County. We did attend EOC training yesterday. Kristen and I did, and we'll continue to work through that process. The CPAT follow-up work, we have one planner working, well, Charlie's working on King some descriptions and responsibilities of an economic development planner job. Just what that might look like, how it could be brought to fruition, you know, contract, all that stuff. We're also, again, the tillable land, working on that. I'm working on the questionnaire from last week, really simplifying that so you have something to come forward. I'm also putting together a calendar that I'll share with you all that I think maybe monthly I'll have an agenda item, so an update for you on CPAT strategies that are underway. It might just be a simple report on the consent agenda so you don't have to listen to me, but just to keep you abreast on what's going on. And we're also starting the audit of the small wind energy conversion systems and looking at the small wind innovation zones and possibility of putting some standards in place for solar energy for the solar farms that are starting to knock on the door. We hope to have that stuff to you probably August, maybe early September for some reporting. And flood task force update, the interviews, three firms were invited based on RFQs. This is Ames is guiding this. Those three teams teams and consultants were interviewed last week, and they staff met yesterday. I had a conflict and couldn't meet, but I think from there there'll be a contractor selected and start work soon. I know there's other stuff, but this morning that is honestly what I could remember. Are the things I'm missing questions you have?
Okay. No, thank you. We're good.
Pushing. Okay. Thanks, Leanne.
You bet. Thank you. Okay, moving along. Item 9, liaison assignments and committee updates. Anything, Paul?
No. Pass.
I will pass as well. Okay. Other reports? None. Okay. Item 11, consideration of personnel actions. We have one personnel action request, I believe.
Move approval. Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the personnel action. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Personnel action is approved. Okay. Next item 12 is consideration of claims.
Another one I like. Okay, this is under $500,000. Move approval of claims.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded the approval of claims. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Claims are approved. Okay, item 13 on the consent agenda as modified. The reason why it is modified is we have added a utility permit, item number 1246 and 1247. We also have a request to pull item of the number 10, which is the acknowledged receipt of a new manure management plan for Rockstar Land and Livestock LLC as submitted, and we have several members of the audience who has graciously come and would like an opportunity to comment as well. So, Board, the rest of the consent agenda with pulling item number 10 is set to go.
Yeah, I'd move the consent agenda with the noted change and pulling number 10.
Second.
It's been moved and second to approval of the consent agenda with noted changes and pull item 10. Hearing no further discussion, Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. Okay, now is the time for item number 10. This is the acknowledgement of the receipt of the new manure management plan. I'm going to ask Margaret James, our environmental health, to come forward, first of all, and I certainly want to acknowledge Supervisor Toot and Sanders, particularly in working with Margaret and so forth, and a few of the individuals that notified the board regarding their concern. We did try to reach out and make sure that a couple other entities were also informed about this item on the agenda, and we're pleased that we have Mike Cox from our conservation director is here, as well as the president of the conservation board here, also in attendance, that wish to comment regarding this particular proposal. But this one is somewhat unique in terms of the process, and the reason that it was on the consent agenda has a lot to do with the threshold that this would meet, and as far as the public hearing portion, etc. So, Margaret, if you are ready to even just give us just a little basic communication, I understand that the laptop may not necessarily be there, but just kind of a hoping that we'd be able to see the aerial map of the area and so forth that we're having questioned just for a minute.
Margaret James with the Story County Environmental Health Department. On June 1st, Story County received... On June 1st, Story County received a manure management application from Rockstar, signed by Kyle Menz. I'm wondering, is Kyle in the audience today?
I don't see him.
Okay, I don't. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him. Let's see. It is the folder on the very top. It should be right there. I can do it from here. I'll get up for you. Okay, sorry about the delay. So the manure management plan was received on June 1st, my birthday. The name of the operation is Rockstar Land and Livestock LLC. Kyle Menz signed for the application, and he is from Maxwell. The contract company is out of Illinois, the Match Office, and they are behind several of the new CAFOs that are going in Story County. The facility size is 2,496 swine, greater than 55 pounds per head. And that is animal unit capacity. You multiply it by 0.4. It's based on one unit equals
a cattle, a cow. So swine is a 0.4 calculation, so you have just under 1,000 animal units. And that, they plan on doing, I guess, two rotations, so it's 4,992 swine per year. They plan on putting in one long building with a form pit manure storage underneath. And so for the manure application, it will be a fall application knifed in. Because it's under 1,000 animal unit capacity, it does not require a construction permit. However, it does require a construction approval letter from DNR. Okay, so all that they really need to submit right now is a manure management plan, receive that letter, and they're good to go. This is the aerial of the proposed site. As you can see, it is just a little under a mile from the Hickory Grove Lake. The area in orange, it's not showing up as well as I hoped, but the area in orange is the manure application area.
And so that's all around in the lower area below where the rock star is, as well as the outlying areas as well?
Yes, there's a 40-acre rectangle square to the west of Rockstar. The building itself will be where that green rectangle is, and that's on 670th Street, and I've got additional slides here. And then the manure management area, application area, is that polygon around the Rockstar area, and the one to the right, and then that square to the left there. This is taken from the manure management application. So that green rectangle shows where the building is going to be. There was a mistake on their map. It's actually 670th Avenue where the address will be. Again, this is taken from the application, or the plan, I should say. And those ovals represent setback distances. So it says that there are no wells within 100 feet, water sources within 500 feet, residences, nothing within 1,000 feet, designated wetlands, nothing within 2,500 feet. And obviously it is not being built on karst topography or alluvial soils. This is not 100% accurate, but it is close to a representation of what the watershed is for the Hickory Grove Lake. So that purple line there shows generally where the watershed area is, and then that hatch mark area is the manure application area for this particular project. So where we're at right now, we may comment on the manure management plan. No master matrix is required because, again, it's under the 1,000 threshold. And then, according to DNR, they may not start construction on this site until at the earliest 30 days after DNR receives the manure management plan. They'll probably receive it today. I know I sent a copy yesterday, but that I don't believe that's official. So when they officially receive it 30 days after that, they can start building. My recommendation, depending on today's comments, of course, but I would like to see it on the agenda again for next week for further discussion and public input, because this is going to go to, I think the Tribune was planning on writing an article on this, and I think that might spur a lot more interest. There's no Monday paper, so today it'll come out. It just hasn't been enough time for folks to comment and think about this project that's being proposed. Most manure management plans that come in, even for new facilities, we take a close look, but this one is especially important because of its proximity to the Hickory Grove Lake.
I think you touched on it, but just for the record, we're not talking about an existing facility that is expanding. Is that correct? So we're actually talking about a new facility And the person who you mentioned, Kyle Mins, that submitted the application, is not the owner of the facility, similar to, say, a local farmer or so forth that had a hog confinement operation, which we generally have dealt with in most cases. This is really an example of one of the larger out-of-state confinement groups coming in, working with a client or working with a manager. How is this?
I think it's a common approach to how these operations are managed now. Rockstar is the LLC, and then they contract with Matchoff for the animals, I believe is the way it works. Not uncommon at all.
Okay. All right. So based upon where we are and as a county and the opportunity that we have here today, we're going to have the opportunity to receive comments from individuals here. Do you contemplate then that we will have the ability to pass on information that we receive today? I'm thinking in terms of the audio of this meeting to DNR for consideration. How can we help facilitate making sure that the voices of the citizens of Story County is heard?
I plan on compiling the comments written and verbal and sending them to DNR as soon as the comment period is over. It really is out of Story County's control, so comment is what it is, and then DNR will weigh them as they come in.
All right. Great. Any other comments?
I want to make sure, and I appreciate Steve Owen being here, I want to make sure that I understand our authority in this, and Margaret, I think you pretty succinctly put it there. We have the ability to comment on this, but we really don't have, as a board, any authority to take any action one way or another on this thing other than providing comment to the DNR.
That's correct.
How about with these manure management forms that we've been receiving and acknowledging? Go back to the watershed, and understanding that the purple line is not exactly accurate. But as I look at that, so we've got Hickory Grove right there to the north. Do we have any control as a county of the manure management within that watershed? Or are we just receiving these plans and that's just the way it is? And if somebody, you know, follows the regulations and they want to spread manure just at the entrance of Hickory Grove, they can go ahead and do that. I want to understand where we are in all this.
Well, their management plan is within all the guidelines that DNR sets forward, so this would be a legal proposal. And I don't know that we have any recourse. And Steve can speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, I actually look at this watershed and understanding a little bit of the topography of Story County, and I feel a little better than I felt a few days ago when this was first brought to my attention, because I had in my mind, okay, we're going to be spreading manure, and a lot of that's just going to be flowing right into Hickory Grove, and I don't see that here. I just don't see it there. But again, Steve, if you can give us any guidance at all as exactly what we're doing, are we just a conduit to make sure that the voices of some of the people of Story County are passed on to DNR as they take action?
Yeah, we're a little bit of both, really, I think. The code provides that the county is essentially two things. In this instance, we're two things. One, under the code, we're the venue for these airing of public comments and the passing of it on. In this particular case, we also, I think, that as a county, as a municipality, as a legal entity, also have an interest here. And I think we probably need to let the applicant know that is the case, that the county as a jurisdictional area provides the venue for this public comment. But we are also, as a municipality, as a person under the law, an interested party, or could be an interested party. And the voice of that interested party are the three of you, and, of course, through the citizens. So, I don't think it's a blurry line. I just think we have to understand that there's a kind of a dual role for the county, particularly in this instance.
I think the importance of this, which is, to my recollection, is a lot different than what we've had before, is because of the proximity to Hickory Grove and its relationship to Story County and the conservation and so forth, maintaining that viable opportunity for recreation use and so forth, and protecting the water quality does certainly be something that Story County would want to weigh in on.
I think that's right, and you know, we have Story County Conservation. It's an independent board funded through Story County. They are here, and I presume so, for the same reason, out of concern. The board today on this agenda passed the 2080 for water quality management for Squaw Creek. I think the concept today is that Story County is concerned about its natural resources. And so I guess I'll leave it at that, that clearly we are a venue for the airing of public comment and a conduit for that to reach the state and the DNR. But in this particular instance, under this set of facts, the county may have an interest. Now, this is an area managed by conservation, their leadership, I think, in terms of comment and how this may affect that probably is appropriate.
Okay, thank you. Okay, board, then with your permission, unless you have other questions for Margaret, is we could hear from several of the individuals that are
here. And I think that's completely appropriate, Wayne, but I think maybe before we do that, we should talk just a minute. Margaret had the suggestion that it also be on next week's agenda and that we encourage public comment, pro and con, so that we're gathering all the information. And I think that may be important to kind of gauge where we are right now as a board, as some individuals want to come up and talk to us, if they understand that there's also possibly going to be an opportunity next week to do the same. I think that may be appropriate at this point. I know I would be in favor. Guys know I've got travel issues next week. I'm trying to work out where I can be here, but I think it would be appropriate if we made sure that this topic was on our agenda next week. I would suggest at the top of our agenda. I don't know if it's appropriate for this to fall under other reports, to come forward and have Margaret just give a brief synopsis again and then receive public comments next week. But that would be my suggestion.
Yeah, because technically having this brought forth next week would not qualify under the public hearing concept because of the publication and notification timeline. But I do think that I would certainly agree with you that I believe it would be appropriate for us to entertain having this discussion next week as well. So,
and just so that I'm clear, that's not intended to stop anybody from saying what they want to say today. I encourage everybody to come and say it, but just also to know that we've also got a week to deal with this some more and gather more.
But in the meantime, today's comments and information gives us a start of gathering documentation that can be submitted, and which is very appropriate.
Next week will just be, like Margaret said earlier, the Tribune will run an article, and I'm sure Loris will add some mention of it in hers, and just give people more opportunity if they want to weigh in.
Okay. All right. Then with that, thank you, Margaret. And with that, I believe I'm just going to go in the order in which they were presented to me. So first of all, I have Heather Beddingfield. Heather, would you come on up? And please, for the record, since this is audio is recorded, just state... if you'd like, your address, we have all of that. You are a resident of Story County, and we'll go from there. I don't think you have to really give all of that information anymore, I believe. Is that correct, Mr. Assistant County Attorney? We don't have to have all of that information as part of the public comment. Is that correct? Their address and so forth? But if you are interested, you can just state your residence of Story County, et cetera, whatever, be fine.
My address is 24541 670th Avenue. I guess my main concerns are obviously the smell. You know, I bought an acreage out in the country to enjoy it. I do a lot of outdoor activities. I walk my dogs. I ride horses. I ride bicycles. And I do a lot of that around Hickory Grove Lake. I also have a lot of friends who camp there, swim there, I'm just wondering who's going to want to do that if it smells. And I don't know. I've never really been around a hog confinement, but, I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be pretty bad, especially that close by the lake and by all of our homes.
Okay. All right. Anything else? Okay, thank you. All right. Next of all, we have, I believe, Donald Schumann. Okay.
My name is Donald Schumann. I live at 3209 Jewel Circle in Ames, Iowa. I own that property. I've been a resident of Story County since 1968. My family and I have spent many, many days since we moved to Ames area at Hickory Grove Lake and Park. I had the occasion to be involved with Boy Scouts for quite a few years. We had many campouts for weekends at Hickory Grove Lake. Beautiful, beautiful lake. Nice, clean air. Very, very good environment. I think Story County can be very, very proud of their facility there. In my travels through the park from time to time, the campgrounds, I noticed there's license plates on vehicles, not just Story County, Polk County, Marshall County, many, many counties. It's something that this facility has a great reputation. It needs to be protected, not only from runoff of swine manure by surface, but also by tile lines. The remark was made that the boundaries that for the watershed may not be quite right. We need to know what is right, 100% right. We need to know where the tile lines drain. All this area has many, many tile lines. There's surface drains in the fields, in the road ditches. Where do all those tile lines drain to? I'm a civil engineer, and I know that back many, many years ago, when trenches were being dug and tile lines placed by hand, they often went through ridges. In other words, water from one watershed was drained into another watershed, which may have been into a third or fourth watershed. That all gets discharged someplace. We need to know where that goes to. We need to be 100% sure. The last thing that I want to see, and many, many other people want to see, is this beautiful facility in Story County being contaminated by surface runoff, runoff from subsurface drainage, and smell, air quality. Now, I do a great deal of traveling, especially on Interstate 35 to the north in Hamilton County. It's quite obvious when the wind's in the right direction that the air quality is decreased. I was born and raised on a farm. We had swine. We had cattle. We had horses, sheep, chickens. But the most offensive odor to me in those days, and still is from swine. It's a stink is what it is. And I think that we need to be looking at protecting the quality of the air for this great facility that we have here in Story County. I thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your comments. Okay, next we have Mike Cox. You didn't realize when you took this job within a year you'd be addressing something like this, did you?
Well, thanks for thanks for the opportunity to come this morning and talk about this. As you know, I'm Mike Cox. I'm the director of Story County Conservation, and obviously here to talk about this Rockstar manure management plan in operation. And I've spoken with Margaret a little bit about this, and the previous gentleman had some very good comments about, you know, getting as much data as we can here. Margaret and I are in the process of reconciling the watershed area. My very rough calculations based on the watershed outline that's been developed by Iowa State and several other organizations that are working on this is that about 180, give or take, acres of the application area is within the watershed. So we'll refine that, and we'll work with Margaret to make sure that we're presenting the best, most accurate information that we have.
Mike, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can you guys also work with Darren Moon to see what kind of records we have on drainage tiles? And I don't know if this is part of a drainage district that we have in the county or not, but I would sure like to have all that information as well if you guys could work with Darren and Scott Wall.
Yep, we will. And, you know, Iowa State has also been, they're the folks right now that have been researching the watershed over the last couple years. And so they have been working with individual landowners, and so they have a little bit of understanding on some of the tile locations as well. So we'll all work together and try to identify those issues. I think everyone knows, you know, Hickory Grove is a flagship park for Story County. It's a flagship park. It was opened in 1970. We get about 70,000 annual visitors to the park. We have the park itself, or I should say those visitors, spend about $6.5 million annually on visiting the park. Those are significant figures. The park is also the largest revenue source that Story County Conservation has. So just to kind of build some framework around the importance of that park. In 2008, the lake, was listed as an impaired water body with the state. And it is impaired for the reason of bacteria. So again, that's another important thing as we move forward in this discussion, keeping that in mind. Since then, we've had several organizations that are working together, formed a watershed review committee, and organizations represented on that committee are the DNR Lakes Program, DNR Fisheries Program, of course, Story County Soil and Water Conservation District, NRCS, IDOLS, Prairie Rivers, RC&D, the list goes on. Iowa State, of course, Iowa Learning Farm, and then, of course, us, the Conservation Board. We are still gathering data, and we hope to conclude all of our research this summer. So this season, the research on this watershed will be concluded. Moving forward, we hope to apply for some grants this fall, receive funding this fall to implement recommendations from this study. We have also been testing E. coli levels at the beach in the swim area for the last several years, and I can say that those levels are increasing. So that is something that that we're obviously concerned of. Research has indicated, thus far, our research has indicated that the lake water quality is being affected by septic system, by geese, of course. We know we have a geese problem there, and livestock sources. So we know that we have implications to the bacteria levels in the lake from those three sources. I want to switch tracks here a little bit and talk about the odor. I grew up on a hog farm. We had 2 500 sow units as I was a kid, and every day I spent working on the hog farm. I'm familiar with hog farms. I have nothing philosophically against hog farms. I know that there is an impact from them, and so my role is to give you an impartial view on what those impacts are. I've got a couple handouts here that I want to give you. That's a windrows map. That shows prevailing wind directions. And the map that that there's one chart on one page, that's a yearly summary. So what this does is show wind directions and speeds. This is the nearest windrows survey location, and this is in Ames.
So the center of this map is in Ames.
It doesn't reach. How should I describe this? This doesn't reach out. This map doesn't show a geographic region. Okay. It shows directions and wind speeds.
But from a point.
But from one point at the airport in Ames.
Okay. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Correct. From the airport. Okay.
This is the closest windrows data that we have. This is the only data point that we have in Storer County. And the other sheet that I gave you shows the same chart, but on a monthly basis, not the yearly summary. If you look at the monthly basis chart, the primary visitation period at Hickory Grove, of course, in the summer. So if you look at April through even October, you'll see the prevailing wind directions are from the south. I think we all anecdotally know that, but there is data that shows that the park will be impacted by southerly winds during the time of year that people are at the park. So there will be a great impact by wind and by water quality.
I'm sorry, just one more time. So this is showing me where the wind is coming from.
Correct.
So if I look at the big map, then I could take that to mean that on an annual basis we have more wind coming directly out of the south than from any other direction. Again, just trying to get my bearings.
Correct. If you look at one of the pieces of that pie, yeah, directly south, yes, that is correct. Yeah, again, that's a good question, Margaret. The seasonality of it, you'll see in the other monthly charts. Of course, we know January through March, we have a significant northwest component to the wind. So
how about fall when the
new application
takes place?
Which would be what, September, October?
It's September, the predominant direction is south, southeast. October, the predominant direction is from the south. And then in November, we start switching over to northwest. So, very good information as far as wind directions there. I also want to give you another handout that comes from the DNR, that comes from the Iowa Lakes Evaluation Project. This talks a little bit more about what I mentioned earlier about the economic activity generated from the park. And one of the things I want to point out here is if you see on the chart, they've got two different scenarios here. The scenario number one is looks at improving the water quality in total phosphorus, suspended solids, etc., nitrogen, etc. Scenario number two goes as far as to say that we're going to improve that more. In fact, scenario two looks at theoretically if the nitrogen, phosphorus, and suspended solids was decreased by 50%. So under that scenario, they've estimated what the visitation and impact would be at the lake. Right now, again, I said we had about 70,000 annual visitors. If those nutrients were reduced by 50% going into the lake, we'd have about almost 190,000 annual visitors. So, again, significant numbers. We regularly get comments from organizations that would like to have events at Hickory Grove. We've had a triathlon there for the last several years. They canceled their swimming portion last year. They didn't hold their swimming portion of the triathlon. I guess you call it a biathlon then. But they didn't do it because of the water quality. We know we have a concern there. We know we're working on addressing it. The state wants to use us as a model for how to address bacterially impaired water bodies. This is important work that we're doing. We have been working with landowners throughout the watershed. The lake has about just south of a 4,000 acre watershed. And we've been working with them. We hope to, as a part of this study that we're doing with ISU and these other organizations, identify some specific management practices that can be done, some target areas practices that can be done to improve water quality, both from a nutrient basis and from a sedimentation basis. Just days ago, we completed repair of the sediment pond at the east game area, so east of 680th Street, was damaged by floods in 2010. That sediment pond is nearly silted in and is marginally functional. We had to replace the control structure or the vertical risers that feed the overflow from that sediment pond. And it's incredible the amount of siltation that has happened in there. So again, we're looking at water quality issues from several different sources, sediment, soil erosion, and nutrient loading, that has a dramatic effect on the lake, both biologically, that I haven't really talked about here, but we'd be more than happy to talk about that, and by visitation or use of the lake. So important issues that I think that I applaud the board's decision to look at this, to allow public input, to make sure we get as much information as we can in moving forward. So thank you, and with that, I'd take any questions.
I have just one, Wayne. The Iowa Lakes Valuation Project that you gave us, first of all, common sense tells me that if the water's cleaner, we're going to have more visitors. I'm just curious what they're basing 2.5 times more visitors or potentially triple the number of visitors. Does that number come from anywhere? Going from 70,000 to 190,000 based on cleaning it up. Again, it common sense to me says cleaner lake means more people are going to come. How do we get to from 70 to 190?
Yeah, I'm not sure what their metrics were in doing this. I know that they've looked at these similar issues throughout the state, and I'm not sure their formulas, so I guess I can't give you a good answer to that, Rick.
may it be fair to assume that usually when you have increased participation, you also increase your amenities as well to accommodate for increased visitation. And a lot of those things all factor in. So the more people coming to use that, you're going to probably be more attractive to investing in upgrading the amenities so that you can accommodate, you know, those folks, whether it's be increased campsites, shower facilities, other types of things that I think all factor in to make a lake like this much more attractive to the public. That could be something that may be indirectly implied, but you raise a very good point there in terms of what are the factors that may go into those increased numbers. So, good point.
If you want to address that, go ahead, and then I came up with another question I had for
go
you.
Go ahead.
As our hog expert who grew up on a hog farm, just as you look at this, I'm hearing two concerns. I'm hearing the concern of water quality and the runoff from the fertilizer application, from the manure application, and I'm hearing a concern about the smell as this is applied. And, Margaret, I think these are usually applied in the fall sometime. Some after crops come out, but before the ground freezes is what we try to do, right? And so I look at those two things, and I think I acknowledge that both of those would be major concerns. But as I sit here in my role on the board of Story County, my primary concern, at least at this point, is water quality. That's Story County's asset. We're working hard to get the water quality improved. And so I'm curious, and I'm curious, first of all, Mike, do you think I'm seeing it accurately? Those are the two primary concerns.
Those are my two primary concerns, correct.
Okay. And as I look at the wind sheet that you provided us, it looks like November, predominantly winds are coming out of the northwest, which would help with the air quality issue. It's pushing it south as this stuff is applied. I'm curious if we have any ability on our manure management plan, and Margaret, this may be more for you, do we have any ability to say to any of our, in this case, Rockstar, do we have the ability to say, we're really concerned about you applying any kind of fertilizer anywhere in our drainage, in the drainage area that feeds to Hickory Grove. Will you work with us to mitigate that? Or is it just this is the manure management plan that they've submitted and that's the way it is and we don't have the ability to try to informally work with them?
Let me comment before Margaret.
Sure.
I think the concept is great. And that's one of the big issues. A lot of times if you're working with local owners and people who live in the community, they're much more apt to be concerned about this and trying to address this to a degree. However, under the guidelines that they have, there would be nothing that would prevent them from moving ahead and applying, the applications during these various times. But that was one of my thoughts earlier on is because of the water quality issue, is would the DNR ever really consider putting some restraints or talking about wanting to monitor the impact of runoff into such a body like this? And if so, they would prevent or say that during certain times, you know, you would not be able to apply any application within these confined areas. I don't know if that's ever been done, but I think that should be part of a if they, let's just say hypothetically, if they go ahead and approve this, based on what Story County's interest is at this point, we would want to ask that question as to how would they be able to work with Rockstar entities here to make sure that there is some monitoring of the runoff and or the application process and the negative impact to us. And if we could determine that there was a definite negative impact, that they not be allowed to continue to do that. But even if they did it and it happened to be a problem, I think it would be some time before we could be able to clean up what has already been impacted in the water stream, and that would take a considerable amount of time and effort. So I'm not sure exactly what I'm asking, but I guess what I'm concerned about is we need to put forth a strong case as to why this may not be in the best interest of Story County. Okay. Margaret, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to take...
You're on the right track there. Let's see. One concern that I have also is the expansion of these facilities. It is not uncommon that they start off with one building and then double the size. So we need to sort of think about, you know, the future of this confinement too. Lifespan of these buildings are like 20 to 30 years, I've been told. The other thing you need to consider, you know, DNR's staffing has been just cut to the bone, and they specifically said the CAFO project has been impacted by this. And so as far as manure management plans and checking up on them, that is not going to happen. It will happen locally by my staff, possibly, as time permits, but DNR will not be doing that. That's pretty much a guarantee. This one, they won't even do a site review on it, probably, because of its size. You know, and then it would be a gentleman's agreement, I assume, you know, for them to be spreading at times that would not impact the lake and the lake activity so much. And a lot of that, you know, it's on farm. It's all time management, scheduling, things like that. They could try, but they couldn't guarantee. I am sure of that, you know.
I think part of the problem is that they've got a huge time concern. If they're going to apply this in the fall, they've got whatever window they have from the time the crops come out until the time the ground's frozen. And for air quality concern, I'm very pleased that it's going to be knife applied. I mean, basically, the farmer's wasting his money if he spreads it on top of the ground. I mean, he's getting much more benefit for the fertilizer aspect of the manure if it's knifed in, which all this is going to be. So it's not going to be spread on top of the ground. It's going to be injected into the ground. And typically they'll incorporate it sometime after it's injected. They'll go over it with a tillage implement and incorporate it into the ground. And that, the air quality with that is much less than it is if it's ground applied. When I was a kid, we ground applied our liquid manure from a hog confinement, and it stinks. There's no way around it. Manure stinks. However you want to color it, it stinks. But it stinks a lot less if it's incorporated into the ground.
How many days do you think it would smell very bad after it's been knifed in? I was not raised on a farm.
You know, it's subjective. I mean, I think the concern about the smell is from the facility itself and the manure that's in the pit. And the conversation that I had yesterday with Jeff from the DNR was he didn't see from the DNR standpoint. He said we don't have any reason not to give them the letter of approval for the manure management plan because all the setbacks are as the DNR has specified. Everything is good as far as the DNR is concerned. I said, what can a citizen do if they're not satisfied with what the DNR says? He says, well, they can always go above me, but he says, I don't know what they're going to base that on. Because, you know, the guidelines that the DNR have put in place are being met, and that's part of the requirement. He said they can always, the concerned landowners in the area can always reach out and work with the owner to see if they're going to plant trees along the north side. He said that's been shown to help a great deal because the stink particles, if you will, attach themselves to particles to dust particles, and that's how they travel. And if it's been shown that if they'll plant a windbreaker or what have you, a row of or two of trees across the north side of the property, that would help break up some of the smell. But you know, it's going to have an odor to it, regardless of what you do to it.
Well, and you've just hit on kind of the point I'm trying to make because I'm viewing us as property owners. I mean, you know, we're a property owner in the area, and so as I look at this graphic, I know Mike said that his estimate right now is I think 180 acres that feed into. As I look at this, we've got 300 acres roughly shaded, right here on this chart, where you see the purple line. I mean, if that were an accurate line, we don't have that much in, and I believe that there's got to be an opportunity to talk to this group and say, this is the area we're concerned about. We're concerned about smell. Let's see what we can do to mitigate that. We appreciate that you're knifing it in, but we're really concerned about water quality. And so anything that you're applying that's within this, these drainage boundaries, anything that we find has tiling that gets it into this, to our, to where it can negatively impact the water quality, work with us to find a way to not spread it there. And if this happens to be close to accurate, I mean, based on that right there, you're not looking at more than 20 or 30 acres probably that's within the drainage area. And I just think we got to use every tool we've got. It doesn't appear to me that one of the tools we have is to deny this thing. We don't get to make the decision. We get to comment on it. But we should also have the ability to try to mitigate things wherever possible. If that includes planting trees, asking that things not be spread in the area that will negatively impact the water quality in Hickory Grove. I mean, we should be able to do some of those things in addition to raising what I think are some very valid concerns. It doesn't appear to me that there's a way to stop this from going forward, so let's work on it.
And I think that's important that everybody understand this, and with my conversation with the gentleman from the DNR yesterday, that there isn't anything that this board can do to stop Mr. Menz from putting up that facility if we thought that's what we needed to do. And from the conversation with the DNR, I don't believe that the DNR has any reason not to sign off on Mr. Menz's manure management plan and allow him to start construction. Maybe I'm too much of an optimist, but I think the Menzes have been good stewards. They've been on that's been a family farm for generations. And Mr. Menz started a farm on it quite a few years ago and has been a good steward. I would simply hope that they would continue to be a good steward and be good neighbors and listen to what the people that are speaking here today and probably will speak next week and listen to their concerns and see if there can be some ground met that, you know, Mr. Menz is entitled to make his living on a farm if that's what he intends to do, and he's within his rights to do that. And I think that cooperation and the spirit of just getting along is huge in these type of things.
Thank you, Mike. Did you have another comment?
I think it's very good, Jermaine, that this discussion has come up. And Rick, you asked about it a little bit earlier about if we have any kind of authority within the watershed. And you know, all of our efforts are based on working cooperatively with the landowners and trying to get trying to move forward with that and as cooperative efforts. There are all of the, I believe all the measures that we'll see come out of the research study, all the recommendations, they're going to be voluntary measures. Hopefully we'll be able to find some cost share opportunities to assist landowners with some of these management practices that are going to be needed. So the other thing I would say as far as the seasonality of the smell, of course, absolutely, it's going to be probably the strongest during application, but it will be there year-round. So,
well, are we suggesting that he's not currently fertilizing these fields in some form or another?
I would assume he is.
And does that have a smell?
Not like this.
Not like this.
This is unique.
Okay.
But it's fortunately the land application will be in the fall when the winds are starting to turn a little bit, and
when we're trying to hunt geese.
When you're trying to hunt geese, so. But I mean, it's a different smell from when just every day than it is to when it's being applied. So.
All right. Thank you. Next up, Ron Kane. Okay. All right. Thank you. Then we have, is it Kristen Klim? Okay.
Gentlemen, my name's Kristen Klim. I live at 21493 620th Avenue here in Nevada. and just here to express my opposition to a facility that would impact the air and or water quality around that Hickory Grove Park. And I do have property less than 2 miles from the proposed site, but I think that the impact that this could potentially have on, I think Mike coined it very well, the flagship outdoor recreational facility of Story County, that far outweighs any impact it would have on me as an individual. I'd also like to share that coming forward and expressing this opposition doesn't come lightly. My family's livelihood is based on agriculture. I've got 270 employees here in Nevada. Their livelihood is based on agriculture. I know the individuals personally that are applying for this. I know them. I know them. I interact with them on a professional basis and on a personal level. And so it's not without a lot of thought and consideration that I come forward and want to and share my thoughts. And had a lot of those written down here in my notes. I think Mike covered a lot of the things that I wanted to share. I think there's some things that are obvious as your nose, and that's the potential for the smell and the water quality issues that we might potentially be faced with there. So I visited the park over the weekend, and I mean, the sole purpose of that park is for people to be outside and enjoy the outside, enjoy nature, enjoy the elements. And there's a pretty good chance that that could be disrupted if this goes through. I visited the site, the proposed site itself, and it's just a big old empty cornfield. And there's no barriers at all currently between the proposed site and the park. So, I mean, you stand there and you can just see, you know, you're less than a mile away. And so I think Margaret touched on expansion. I know from my own experience, any private business's goal is to grow and to expand. That's how you become more profitable. That's how you make more money, and I think that we need to be concerned about that as well. I know it'd be difficult if I wanted to do something in my line of business, and I had individuals that were opposed to it, it wouldn't sit very well with me, and so I'm taking that into consideration as well. Done some research. I talked to Jeff, I believe it's Theobald, sounds like maybe the same individual that you had spoken with about this. And again, just to clarify, my understanding is that the long and short of it is that Story County Board of Supervisors has absolutely no authority in this situation either to grant or deny the management plan or the construction of this facility. And I would stop short with saying that, I guess, has no authority. Maybe I should restate this. Is in talking with Jeff, he made it very clear, and it sounds like he did to you too, Mr. Toot, is that this application meets all the regulations. There is nothing telling them not to grant this application. And he was a good guy. He just said, our job is to look at the regulations and figure out whether or not the applicants are following the regulations, and if they are, we grant them permission to do what they want to do. Public opinion has absolutely no impact in it. If you want to change it, you need to talk to your legislators. You need to do something along those lines. And that all makes sense to me. At the same time, I'm a 44-year resident of Story County, and I'm sure a lot of other people in this room have been around for a while. If this facility goes in, it's going to be there for our lifetimes. There's no do-overs. There's no go back. Well, we were wrong. We want to make a change. And so I think it's important we need to take that into consideration. I do understand that, when farmers are doing the knifing in the fall is when the odor is going to be the strongest. I think the reality of it is it's going to be there all the time. And I think it would just be it would be disappointing and a shame if Hickory Grove lost its luster, if it lost its attraction to people to want to come and enjoy it. And so I guess the thing that I would say probably to the board members and to everybody here is that from what I can tell, there's only two things that are going to keep this from happening. One is if the applicants withdraw, you know, what they've submitted, and two is legal action. That's it. And so, you know, when you talk about legal action, you're talking about either a private individual filing suit, or you're talking about the county looking at their flagship and saying, I don't know if we want to do this to our flagship. And so the point I'm trying to make is that even though the way the cards are laid out on the table right now, that Story County has no authority, Story County might have to step up and do something, depending on, I think, some of the research that Mike has talked about and is that wanting to try to perform. The other thing I picked up on is it sounds like that he needs the summer to do that research, and my guess is that all that information isn't going to be collected by the time, if the wheels just keep turning and the timelines just keep going the way that they're set in place. So I think that's the majority of the message that I wanted to share, and thanks for letting me speak.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your comments as well. Okay, moving on. Next is James Pease, Dr. Pease. Okay. And we have just one more, according to what's been turned in after this, unless there's someone else that's motivated to comment.
Well, thank you. First of all, my name is James Pease, 32-year resident of Story County. Live at 3840 Stagecoach Road, the northeast side of Ames. And I am the current chair of the Story County Conservation Board, as the three of you know. And I just found out about this last night, right before bedtime. So it is, I haven't had a chance to prepare a lot of things. And so I'm really pleased. I want to thank you guys, first of all, for pulling it off the consent agenda, first of all, so that we can know more. The fact that it was just filed the 1st of June hasn't given any of us a whole lot of time to, and I really appreciate Mike's staying up late and pulling together some research for this morning. It will give citizens of Story County a chance to comment and to learn some more about this facility. I want to thank the residents who've had the courage and the wherewithal to come and speak before the Board of Supervisors as well. I want to encourage you to come back next week when it is, presumably, will be on your agenda. First thing it seems to me is I think I want to make it very, very clear that the fault here of not being able to your frustration has been the same frustration that other boards of supervisors all over the state of Iowa have had with this very issue, and the fault is not yours. The fault is not certainly the DNR's, because the regulations that are passed have been passed in such a way is that they are doing all they can do. You are doing all you can do. The fault lies in the legislature. And the way the laws are written are to protect certain entities that are putting up these facilities. And they're doing that very, very well. They have come in just under the limits. Those limits are deliberately written that way. So it's not the frustration that you're expressing is the same frustration that lots of Board of Supervisors have had, that lots of citizens have had in this state, and has divided much of rural Iowa along some very difficult lines. I would reiterate that in fact we do have, as a county, a very strong interest due to the proximity to land that we, as citizens of Story County, and you as representatives of those citizens, own and operate for the benefit of all those citizens. Like all of our parks, we depend upon, because they're often isolated, we do depend upon the good citizenship of our neighbors and the cooperation of our neighbors. And Paul, I think you're right in that we need to seek every way we can to try and work with them. But I, the last gentleman who spoke said it well. It may come down to whether we as a county decide we want to try to stop this, and that may take legal action. Legal action in these circumstances has not been terribly successful, I will say, and we'll let Steve talk to that, because of the way the laws are written in Iowa, the code is written in the state of Iowa, and it makes it very, very difficult. But this is a community resource for the citizens, owned by the citizens, and anything that impacts that negatively to this extent that it potentially could will be a reflection, I think, on the future of parks and conservation areas in this county. Now, I intend as chair to make sure that we get this on our agenda next week, and since it was of a meeting of the County Conservation Board, but it we may not be able to meet before we have a chance to comment again, so we'll have to see. All of the things that have been expressed, the tile lines, I'm afraid, will end in a large measure of frustration, but we can try to map those. It's only the more recent ones that are that have any maps at all, and all over the state tile lines have been put in, and there are no maps for most of them. That's certainly a potential impact, but certainly odor and water quality are the two major concerns. And working with or attempting to work with this entity, even though they're an out-of-state corporation, may be difficult at best. But I applaud your saying that's certainly one route we can go, but it may take us farther than that. So I just want to say that on behalf of the Story County Conservation Board, we are extremely concerned about this being this close to one of our major assets in the county. There is no question that agriculture is also a major asset in the county, in the state of Iowa. But just as limits are placed on people's actions when they choose to live in cities, there certainly are some limits that need to be placed on the actions of citizens in agriculture. And so far, this portion of agriculture has been very successful at making sure those limits are things that they can use in situations like this, so that you have no power as a voting group. And the citizens have no power. And that's a real frustration. And I think that means, again, we all need to, you as elected representatives and us as citizens need to express that to our legislators, the frustration that you're feeling. And if we want that law to be changed, then we need to work at that. So we will make some additional comments after our meeting next week. But I think that's all I have for now. Take any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, our last presenter here, a person to comment, Mark Brackey, I believe. Is that Brackey or Brackey? Brackey, okay.
Yeah, my name is Mark Brackey. I live at 24681 670th Avenue, so I'm a resident in the area. And I think this has been a great discussion. A lot of good points have been brought up. I'm not going to talk a lot here. I agree with a lot of the points that have been brought up or ones that I had questions on. And one that wasn't brought up, which I believe would affect me, is traffic on the road as far as feed trucks or, you know, moving the swine, you know, to wherever, into the facility or away from it. The road that I live on weekends is already a pretty busy road with, you know, people going to and from the lake itself. And so that was just one concern. And that can kind of tie into my other question is, has another site even been looked at? You know, I know of 680th Avenue, a mile east of 670th, is mostly a paved road all the way up to 30. as far as the traffic issue is concerned. I mean, that's basically all I had. The tile issues and all that is, I agree with all those, and they're good questions. So, yeah, I mean, and another question I had was, I just found out about this myself, and I know nothing about hog farming or anything like that, and I've talked to people that know something about it, and is there a different type of building that doesn't have a pit, but there's storage above ground in a contained...
There are some.
Okay. And would that help reduce the smell? Like, no?
I think the key probably is the application and when it's applied. But I don't know either. Mike and Paul maybe can speak more directly to that or not. But there are some above ground type storage facility or pits, as you call it, and some pits do go into the ground for certain distances. But so it varies. You know. But I think you've raised a couple points that wasn't mentioned earlier regarding the traffic to and from the facility and what impact it will have, not just your residents, but, you know, the others as well. Mm-hmm. So, okay, anything else?
No, that's all.
Okay. Okay. At this point, thank you. These are all the names that I've submitted here. I would suggest that if there are others, next week, the action of the board do plan to have this on the agenda again for further comments and discussion. I would say that board, according to the agenda, our role here is basically to acknowledge the receipt of the manure management plan. And in addition to that, which is a little different, I think we are asking Margaret to forward comments to the DNR regarding what we gather from this meeting and next week. So I would assume, and Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, is in addition to acknowledge it, maybe the motion should contain the direction to make sure that we do forward comments to the DNR along with the manure management plan, et cetera. Is that your understanding as to our role at this point?
I think our role is simply to acknowledge receipt of the plan.
But as far as the questions and the information, since we're not having a regular public hearing, I think we could ask for that information to be done as we have in many other cases. Stephen, could you comment directly regarding this? We're going to acknowledge the receipt. One of the whole purposes of having this public input was to make sure that the DNR had some evidence of the not only concern of Story County, but the concern of the citizens as well.
Clearly, we received the report.
I think that's all we need to do today, because the public comment period is really being continued to next week, is it not? So at this point, I'm satisfied that we acknowledge receipt.
Do we have the ability? Okay, so we've received this report. We're to acknowledge the receipt, but we have questions on the report. We want some more information on the report. Do we have the ability, and would it be appropriate to defer even acknowledging the receipt while we gather more information on it, or do we just need to go ahead and say, yeah, we got the report?
I think it's up to you. I mean, given really the limitations the code places on the board and what appears to be, you know, some public sentiment here, I think the board's well within its power to say we'll defer acknowledgement of receipt until all public comment is received, of the public comment.
Would you put okay?
Well, she's handing me something. I guess I don't really care, because I'm inclined to say that acknowledgement of a receipt is one thing. We're not. I don't know that it matters. I'm not, and maybe I'm not understanding what you're asking me here.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we've received their manure management plan. I have not gotten all my questions answered. I want to go talk to Mr. Okay, Mann.
That to me is, and I'm satisfied with that as your legal counsel, that until your questions are answered, you need not acknowledge receipt of anything.
Well,
I mean, to say where...
I know where you're going.
When the government acknowledges receipt of something, even though it's not really putting a stamp of approval on it here, we're making an acknowledgement and understanding what the legal effect of an acknowledgement is. So, in my opinion, I think the board is entitled, and as an independent and sovereign board, entitled to have its questions answered before it exercises acknowledgement, legal acknowledgement of anything. So if you're asking me what are we entitled to do and what can we do, I think that's the answer.
Yep.
And I guess maybe if I'll have to defend you on it, I will.
Well, do we create any problems for anybody by if we defer acknowledging to next week?
No, because they've actually received it.
The train's left the station.
Yeah, the deadline, I mean, they've already submitted it to us.
It has no force of action.
It's
simply, as I see it, if we did not acknowledge receipt because we had additional questions, it's simply underscoring the point that we have additional questions.
Well, and because we may need to take action with regard to what ultimately happens here, whether we acknowledge this or not, I think we're entitled to gather that information and look out for our best interests. The state of Iowa has essentially said you're a nullity here. So I would take the position that we can consider them a nullity. And we're going to look out for what's best for Story County and the people in it, and that's what we're doing. And I don't mean to be flip about this, but quite frankly, at some point, we just got to cowboy up a little bit, I think, and this might be one of those times.
Well, I really want to go meet with Kyle Mins. I mean, I understand it's an out-of-state entity that they're contracting with, but for me, it's the landowner and the people that are going to be living there that I want. And as I understand it now, you're talking about the Mins live right here on kind of the eastern portion of this. Is that right, Margaret? Do you know that? I'm looking at the homestead right there, and I'm.
I think Kyle lives down by Mansell, but Kyle's mom and dad
I don't want to make this any simpler than it is, but I guess the way I look at this is we're just simply being asked to acknowledge that we've received this report. And I don't know that whether we've got questions or not is going to change that. I mean, we've got the report. We've received it. You know, there's not necessarily a comment section on here where we can ask those questions. I think it's up to us if we want to go meet with the landowner or do whatever we want to do. And if Mike's got more information that he needs to gather, that's all part of the process. Yeah, well, not really, because what's going to happen is going to happen. Like Mr. Clem said, Mr. Mins withdraws his application, or somebody files legal action in order to stop that. So I think all we're being asked to do here today as a board is simply recognize or show that we've acknowledged the receipt of this plan.
I'm with you, and I'm not with you.
Yeah, you are a politician. Holy man, that was.
I mean, it's clear.
On the fence so long.
No, it's clear to me that.
Well, let me see if
what
I
you have. What we're asked to do, as Paul has said, is just acknowledge receipt of it. Unlike other manure management plans and so forth that have come forth to us, we as a have a vested interest in this particular construction because of its proximity to a very valuable resource to Story County and the citizens. And if we don't have a mechanism by which the voices of the Story County Board of Supervisors, the Conservation Board, and the citizens at large can comment in this one particular entity, then
we really do have a real crisis in terms of public comment. As you was already alluded to, the legislature has put in place guidelines that allow for, you know, this type of operation to take place. But as an entity, in the area of public opinion, sometimes that is the only vehicle that is available that allows, that will cause the legislators to revisit some of their decisions and whether or not some regulations and changes need to be put in place, such as this one particular one. So one side of me says that I like the thought of deferring it, but ultimately we still would have to acknowledge it next week.
Yes, who?
Well, I mean that's the whole purpose. I mean, we received it. It's
I think
so. Either we are we going to say we didn't receive it? I don't see how we can say we didn't receive it.
I think said the correct and probably the operative word here. We may recognize its receipt.
I think that's all we're being asked to do.
Right.
The DNR's already got a copy of it anyway. He was looking at it when I was talking to him on the phone.
But I think recognizing the receipt and acknowledging.
Right.
And I may be entirely wrong, but I'm viewing that as two entirely different things.
I don't see how.
Yeah.
We're just acknowledging.
Because you had a lawyer who can split a hair 100 different ways. That's why.
I mean, all we're doing is acknowledging receipt of the report or the plan. It's not even a report. It's a manure management plan. It's been properly filled out and filed in the auditor's office. It's been placed on our agenda, and all we're being asked to do is acknowledge receipt of that report. And we've received it. If it wasn't on the agenda, we wouldn't have received it. So I'm going to make a motion that we... Let me make my motion first. I'm going to make a motion that we acknowledge receipt of the manure management plan for Rockstar Land and Livestock.
Is there support? The motion dies for lack of a second. So, at that point, then we're left with, is there a better word to denote the discussion that we've had today? Because I think the fact that we've had it on the agenda and we've talked about it prompts some recognition that it is a topic of concern. So whether we, so if we're not acknowledging the receipt, or we, what was the word that was used earlier?
Recognizing
that there is.
Well, understand that the agenda, the purpose of the agenda is to provide public notice.
Right.
It is not presupposes any action by the board. So that's why I think don't get lost in the idea that it says acknowledgement, because that should not in any way presuppose any action by the board for any agenda topic. If there is an alteration or a new motion, certainly that's a possibility.
I would suggest that we have already indicated that we want this on next week's agenda under other reports. I would suggest that in lieu of any action being taken, acknowledging receipt, we still have that as one of the issues we've got to deal with next week. So I would suggest that it just carry forward. I mean, I don't believe that any formal action has to be taken right now, since we know we're dealing with this next week, and basically this thing just carries forward and is on next week's agenda. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think we got to take action.
But we're really deferring any action at all.
I don't think we're doing anything.
So we're not doing anything.
I think we've heard comments, and we're expecting to hear more comments next week, and then we'll deal with that at next week.
Would that be a motion?
I'm planning on not making any motion.
All right.
Well, yeah.
What I'm struggling with is the...
But the board, the chair is struggling with is how do we dispose of the business before us today?
Exactly.
And the agenda does indicate the board will make some consideration. It may be appropriate for someone perhaps to make a motion that this matter be continued for purposes of gathering input and for consideration of the matter at some point.
Yeah, I certainly don't want it to be mistaken that my motion.
Right, I agree.
No, absolutely.
I agree.
All in favor of having the public comment section next week and giving everybody the opportunity to have their questions answered to the best that we can answer them in this forum.
All right, I'll make the motion that all further discussion and consideration on this matter be continued to next week's meeting.
I'll second it.
Been moved and seconded that all further discussion and deliberation on this matter be continued till next week. Any further comments or discussion?
We weren't going anywhere anyway. I mean,
this means I need to change my plane ticket. That's
this,
what it means.
This just moves us along, is all this does.
Well, all those in support of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Stephen, as well. And again, a special thank you to all of you that came today to address the board regarding your concern, and Margaret for your work as well in this area. We've got some challenges ahead because this could be just the beginning of some of the things that counties are going to be faced with in this particular arena with outside entities coming in, working with local owners to expand production in these areas. And the impact that it will have certainly is worthy that we do address it and have our voices heard. So with that said, we will take this up next week. And so we go back to the agenda now. I believe item number 14 is public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on the agenda. The board may not take any action at this time, but may do so in the future. Is there anyone that would like to address this? Okay. Announcements from the supervisors.
I'm over my word limit for today, so I'm going to pass.
Pass.
Move adjournment.
Second.
Been moved and second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.
And pay attention that